Welcome, everybody, to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I am Teddy Schleifer. It is Monday, July 25th, and that means it's Media Monday. Editor-in-Chief John Kelly is in the house, and we're here to talk about Ari Emanuel's abs. Not really, but kinda. Other topics include why Jay Carney is moving from Amazon to Airbnb, and what happened in my first intramural basketball game last night. We'll hear about topics like that and more on today's episode of The Powers That Be.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. See how you profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/powersthatbe, netsuite.com/powersthatbe. That's netsuite.com/powersthatbe.
Welcome, everybody, back to The Powers That Be. We're here with John Kelly, our editor for Media Monday. Hey, John.
Hi, Teddy. How's it going?
I'm good. We just published a piece by our media correspondent and senior abs observer, Dylan Byers. A very important piece for folks who are, you know, trying to understand the inside conversation in Hollywood, in Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and Washington. And that is about Ari Emanuel's abs, really the inside conversation this week. John, do you want to just like give a quick backstory to, I'm curious what your reaction was when Dylan told you that he had this scintillating inside reporting on the Ari Emanuel body?
You know, not every story, Teddy, is, you know, something's come together in a pretty straightforward way. This one actually has a backstory. I think these photos posted to TMZ during our Monday afternoon team call, right?
Right.
Loyal readers of the backstory will know that there's always some sort of great activity happening on Puck Slack. We have these two meetings on Monday. One is a business performance one run through, and the other is a sort of more creative meeting. And that meeting was winding down, and all of a sudden, it was just a showstopper. And I feel like it was impossible for anyone to pay attention to anything because, as Teddy, you know well, Ari Emanuel does not look like your average run-of-the-mill 61-year-old guy. I mean, that guy is stacked. And he also looks like he's very comfortable manipulating a yacht hose in foreign territory. I actually am going to take the minority view here, though, and suggest that I thought Elon Musk looked all right. I think he looked strong. He looked like he probably could lose a few here or there. I'm not body shaming him, and please, nobody. Don't aggregate this. Don't at me. Don't at me. But I thought that he actually looked like a guy who, like a football player who was, you know, maybe a couple months out of shape. But yes, the world has gone crazy. And so here's what happened next. I got an unsolicited text message from a senior media figure who I will not name here saying 2,000 words on Ari? Question mark. I said, okay. Oh, come on, enough. And then this person persisted. And I said, all right, I don't know. I don't know if there's much to say here. The guy looks great for his age. He just got married. You know, like at Puck, we appreciate athleticism and love. And he's got it all going on here. And anyway, after a couple of days, no joke, this topic of conversation came up like a bazillion times. And it had come up to Dylan a bazillion times. And at that point, the horse was off to the races and there was no reining it back in.
For folks who have not read the story yet, includes details such as his what type of smoothie he has, which is a kale charred spinach avocado smoothie. John, our friend Brian Morrissey, I saw this on Twitter earlier today, made a good point, which is that A, Brian doesn't really believe that this is Ari's actual diet, and seems to think that there's a little bit of mythologizing here. But he made a good point. He said, I think he could just do more planks and pull-ups and get 80% of the way there and live a far more normal life. There is like an element of, I mean, I read this with my Silicon Valley glasses on, and you know, there is an element of kind of tech titan. Right. You know, Ari's not
the cryogenic therapy.
Yeah, the people who are obsessed with these, you know, like getting 80% of the way there in sort of biohacking is not good enough, right? Mm-hmm. There's a difference between good and great, and that, you know, it requires living not a far more normal life. It requires doing crazy shit like Ari is alleged to be doing, such as waking up at 2:30 a.m.
Yeah, that's the most compelling detail, is the 2:30 a.m., then the meditation, then the sauna.
Right, but that's always a part of like the Silicon Valley like success machine, you know, autobiographies, you know. Mm-hmm. Eric Schmidt wakes up at 3:35 a.m. I mean, there's an element of like, I know Ari, I'm sure, did not want this out there, but obviously it makes him look extraordinarily driven.
And West Coast people also do tend to wake up much earlier in order to be involved, especially when they're running businesses in New York and Europe. And full disclosure, Puck is a WME client. That's a division of Endeavor, the public entity that he runs. But anyway, the guy looks great. The thing that actually has been the most interesting to me is his abs are so chiseled that people have forgotten the man who he's hosing down, who happens to be the wealthiest man in the world, who's involved in probably right. the most recognizable litigation case, you know, since I don't know when. Only a few days ago, we found out that the Delaware Chancery Court is not going to listen to Elon Musk's protestations to delay the trial, elongate the trial. They're saying, no, we're going to do it, and it's going to be short, and we're going to get right to it. And of course, the chancellor who is overseeing this case, Kathleen St. Jude McCormick, she recently adjudicated a much smaller but similar case and enforced the transaction. So I have two questions for you, Teddy. First of all, I just want you to make a prediction about what you think is going to happen, whether this is going to close or settle.
Okay.
And I also want to know if the sort of flavor or the taste for Musk in Silicon Valley, in the world that you cover, has changed. If he's gone too far here, I've heard that his family members are sort of annoyed by this. They didn't want him to go through with it. And this is all an unnecessary pain in the neck. So I wonder if his peer group is also rolling their eyes or even yawning a bit more than that.
Well, as a expert Delawarean, someone who knows too much about Delaware Chancery Court, including, we'll see, I'm from Dover, Delaware, for folks who are not long-term listeners to POT, unlike our CEO, Joe Perchicky, who's from Wilmington, Delaware. We all have different divisions of the Chancery Court, which I will, that'll be on the Powers That Be Inner Circle call next, for anyone who's super interested in Delaware Chancery Court.
Yeah, for the Delaware media market only,
yes,
I think.
Yes, there actually is no Delaware media market. It's only Philly and Baltimore. I would be shocked if this actually went to court. As Bill Kine has written, you know, there's clearly a lot of numbers between 1 and 44, or between 1 and whatever Twitter's market cap ends up at the end of this trial. The argument that Twitter is shrouded in uncertainty, you don't need to go to Harvard Law School. That makes perfect sense, which was sort of the crux of the decision we saw this week. Just put yourself in the shoes of, you know, a 33-year-old PM at Twitter right now. I mean, you have no idea, is this company going to be totally transformed under a new CEO? Or are we going back to the 2018 era of Twitter where, you know, things were relatively normal? Maybe it wasn't surging on the stock market, but you had a normal 9-to-5 or whatever existence. It seems patently obvious that this company needs closure or certainty. So an expedited trial in October feels like, in theory, the right decision. Though I imagine there will be a lot of calls between lawyers in September and October trying to find a number between 1 and 44. As much as I want people to visit Dover, Delaware, I don't think it's going to happen. How about you?
First and foremost, you know, as you know, Teddy, Puck has shared a block with Twitter for about a month and change in Chelsea. I don't think I've seen a soul walk into that building. So if Elon does go through with this transaction, my first piece of advice would be to sell the place, even in a soft market. I think Twitter in SF is in the old Chronicle building, right?
No, their Twitter has a very controversial building in the Civic Center area, which was paved through with extraordinary tax breaks in like around 2011.
Okay.
Elon had tweeted about turning it into a homeless shelter because he thinks no one's actually going into the office anyway.
That's funny. Well, yes, I agree with you. I actually don't think it's going to even get to the to this hearing. I think that they'll settle before. One of the things I'm very curious about, and this is a sort of semi-prediction or extemporized suggestion, is I wonder if he'll find a way to behave more favorably about the company, see if the stock price is going up now that there's going to be a trial. It seems like these ARBs who bought Twitter expecting the deal are now optimistic, and maybe more people who bought in at when it was hitting its low in 30 are coming back now. And so I think the spread is shrinking. I wonder if there's any way to shrink it further. Obviously, I'm not suggesting any way that he do anything manipulative that the SEC would find problematic, but it seems like the spread is shrinking, and it's going to shrink to the point where this is probably a manageable loss for him. And when you're that ungodly wealthy, I presume that a multi-billion dollar penalty has some sort of positive tax avoidance upside somewhere else in his portfolio.
John, let's take a quick break and we'll come back after this.
Hey, Powers That Be listeners, I'm here to tell you that there's no reason to panic the next time you're searching for the perfect gift. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you a curated list of gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. I use Etsy all the time and have for years. I bought my brother some artwork. I bought my wife some jewelry. I even bought a rug for our living room on Etsy. I love it. But there's a lot of pressure around gifting. I usually have a hard time thinking of gift ideas for friends and family members around the holidays or birthdays in my life. And sometimes I get super stressed trying to find the perfect thing. But now with Gift Mode on Etsy, I can search hundreds of gifting personas and find so many incredible items. And I actually just found the perfect gift for a buddy who's just as into Cincinnati sports as I am, a hot cup of Joe Burrow mug. That's right, I found that on Etsy. It's amazing. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner or a birthday present for the pickleballer, Gift Mode has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
We're back here on The Powers That Be with John Kelly from Media Monday. John, someone who is not on the boat, as we shift our gaze to, there's really the haves and the have-nots. There's the folks in the boat and the folks who are.
One day, Teddy, one day.
Jay Carney, who is as much of a Powers That Be character as there possibly could be, someone who has had a successful career in lots of different power corners of American society, in journalism, in government, and for the last 5 years, Carney's been a pretty high profile figure. I feel like, his tenure as sort of the political and policy Sherpa to Jeff Bezos as the head of government affairs and external relations at Amazon. Jay Carney is now stepping down. The news was broken today to do basically the same job at Airbnb. There are a lot of crossovers between Amazon and Airbnb, sort of these two-sided marketplace businesses. A lot of execs, even when Airbnb was private, that would leave Amazon and go over there. There may be some board crossovers too. I'm not remembering exactly. But Carney is, I don't know, I'm curious if you've had any interactions with him just over the years, but he is, he was an aggressive guy at Amazon. Like, Bezos, when Carney took that job at the end of the Obama era, like Bezos was not this target of the left in the way that he is today. I mean, Amazon was a smaller company, just straight up. And it makes me think about what this move means in sort of the big picture of highly choreographed, closely scrutinized PR moves. There are a few people who have more experience or higher profile than Jay Carney.
Yeah, Jay Carney's interesting for a bunch of reasons. You're right. He was a sort of mid-level reporter at Time in the Mark Halperin era. I think I'm sure someone would roll their eyes at mid-level, but he was, I think he was the White House correspondent. He was a very connected journalist, but he was not Maggie Haberman, I guess, for lack of a better term. I don't know him, but I knew a bazillion people who worked there and worked with him. And it was stunning when he went to work for Biden first, I believe, and then eventually got elevated to be press secretary. And in lame duck era Obama, I'm not taking anything away from the guy, but this wasn't like he wasn't Robert Gibbs. He worked through the system. And you're totally right that when he got to Amazon, everything was different. Amazon was different. I don't think it had even owned Whole Foods yet. And Jeff Bezos was like ostensibly this happily married guy. So Carney's public profile changed significantly when the sort of dick pic photo saga happened. And I believe he worked with Jeff Bezos, or I can't imagine a world in which he didn't work with Jeff Bezos to write that Medium post that made all these, you know, maybe it was a window into this sort of writer Jay Carney was, all these sort of not entirely founded allegations about the vast, you know, conspiracy, political conspiracy against Bezos. He referred to all this as a complexifier, which was a word he made up that I immediately fell in love with. It's just like a totally bit of like, you know, post-Arcana bullshit that was, I guess, a sort of seven-figure rabbit out of a hat. I don't know what Carney's skill is, but this is a skill of an entire class. We were talking before the show about Chris Lehane, who was the Clinton-Gore era person who had this job before. He's now working for Katie Hahn.
The shop at Airbnb before that Carney's taken.
Excuse me, yes, right. And I think Carney would correct us both if we said that he was a PR guy, because he's not. It's messaging and policy. I don't know what that means precisely, but what I think it means generally, based on the people I know in this world, and Jeff Morrell, the person who left Disney, would be a sort of, you know, probably lesser paid peer to this, is you spend a lot of time with the boss. You help the public shape the perception of them, and you also help them shape their perception of the public. And so I was not surprised to see this move, because Bezos has now ascended to a new realm and a new place in his life. Andy Jassy is the CEO of Amazon, and he wants his guy. The same way that, you know, Bob Iger was closely managed for his entire tenure by Zinnia. And when Bob Iger left, Bob Chapek wanted his own person. You know, I think everyone will tell you he handled it very imperfectly. Zinnia Mucha, I think I may be mispronouncing her name, was respected and feared in the business. And he hired somebody who had no experience in entertainment and seemed like he was very turned on by some of the soft charms of working at Disney. So anyway, that's the point, that the connection between principal and PR, comms, policy, body man extraordinaire is everything. And I presume this is a Brian Chesky move. He's met him, he feels comfortable with him. And if you're Jay Carney, he's probably thinking, okay, this is a guy who's like 40, you know, maybe just north of 40. Yep. And he's going to, you know, be his guy for the next 10, 15, you know, 20 years, however long Brian Chesky still wants to run Airbnb before, you know, he's building his own rocket ship company or whatever.
Right. And Obama and Chesky are actually pretty close. And you know, Chesky is someone who I think sees the, you know, center left kind of political class as, you know, he admires them. So it makes sense from the Chesky perspective as well. Carney had some real kind of screwball moments at Amazon where he would, you know, he still tweets in a personal capacity, whatever that means, you know, where Carney would, I don't know if you remember this, John, where Carney was like making fun of one of the umpires during the World Series, maybe two or three years ago, where he was like tweeting that he was like some like fat, overweight. Speaking of body shaming, Carney was tweeting about that. And like, you could think like, who cares about Jay Carney's tweet at, you know, 10:30 p.m. in a personal capacity. But when you are head of public relations or policy or at Amazon, like,
oh, no. Yeah, that's an own goal. That's crazy.
I think I recall Amazon just like officially apologized for Carney's like 11:30 p.m. tweet about some hump in the World Series. You know, and, you know, Amazon also had a number of tweets going back and forth with a member of Congress about whether or not Amazon drivers had to pee in bottles or not. And Carney was really involved with that. So, like, I think, you know, Amazon became obviously very aggressive as scrutiny increased on them. And sometimes it seemed a little bit too torqued up. And Airbnb is, you know, always sort of trying to position himself in Silicon Valley as like the nice guys, right? Chesky is like very well liked. They benefited for a long time of being in the same generation as Uber. And it was often Uber and Airbnb. So Chesky could be the anti-Travis Kalanick, which helped. But, you know, Airbnb is also still, even, you know, a decade plus into their existence, like still fighting with cities all the time, especially internationally.
You know this well, Teddy. When you talk to incredibly successful CEOs who've run disruptive companies, they actually don't think about politics the way we do, where it's big government, small government, social issues. They tend to, besides Peter Thiel and a few others, all generally agree on a number of set issues. They're fighting for ways to grow their businesses. And they tend to think that people who disagree with them, just don't understand the world in the enlightened capacity that they do. So I think any bit of baggage that Jay Carney has is obviously an advantage to someone like Brian Chesky, who has cultivated this image as a good guy. I think he went to RISD of all places.
Correct.
He's not cut from the same cloth as many of these other characters. Also an extremely fit guy, by the way.
Former collegiate bodybuilder, if I recall.
Right. So Ari, look out here. We'll see you both at the Puck Triathlon. But I think that they need bruisers. This is why guys like Bradley Tusk and Chris Lehane, who are used to waging very public battles, why they're comfortable in that role. And it's not for the faint of heart. And as Don Draper once famously said, this is one of my favorite quotes, that's what the money's for.
John, I'll let you go. Hope you had a great weekend. And any final thoughts about the NBA offseason before?
Yeah, so Teddy, we decided we were going to talk about this quickly. We did this last year in an untaped episode that you pointed to in a moment when it looked like the Miami Heat had a chance to go the distance. And I sort of cut off your knees there.
I've pointed this out multiple times.
Predictions that don't turn out to be true are often considered incorrect. But where is Durant going? Well, the Knicks signed Donovan Mitchell. And I would like to know the 2023 NBA champion.
I think Durant stays with the Nets. I think that the at the end of this, the trade value that the Nets are going to expect, Durant is on the Nets at the start of the season. I think there's not that many people who can put together a package that would be good enough to get, you know, a top five NBA player. And, you know, Kyrie re-signing. I know Durant made his intent to be traded public right after Kyrie signed, but I have a feeling that they're going to start winning games. Durant's going to see an NBA championship in the offing and stick around. I mean, that's going to be good. I mean, Kyrie didn't play half the season last year. NBA champion, I think is the Bucks. I think they've made good offseason moves. I think Giannis is still the best player in the NBA. I think they sort of got a rough exit last round because of Middleton being injured in the entire series of the Eastern Conference Finals. I think the Bucks are the best team in the NBA, and I don't actually think it's particularly close.
I agree completely. I'm stunned. This is
okay.
I'm
on
rubbing
both
off
those points?
On you. This is great on both those points. Yes, okay. Absolutely. I think I actually think that the Bucks also have assets to make a mid-season trade. And this sounds crazy, but I would not be shocked if Russell Westbrook ends up on the Bucks and actually is a net positive addition.
Oh, really? Okay. Just got to shoot no shots a game.
They still have 10 shots that they can distribute especially for nights when Middleton thinks he's the top 10 player, which is often.
My indoor basketball league started last night. I'm on a team with four other people, all of whom are friends with each other. And I am like the one person who's not in this friend group. So basically last night in my game, for people on my team who are listening to this podcast, which is of course all of them, I did not get the ball much. I'll just say that. I think I was getting some Russell Westbrook treatment. No passes. I think I shot the ball twice.
Well, we know you're not a ringer, I guess.
Yeah. The problem is don't be on a team with people who are friends with each other because you know they're all shit talking me the next day. All right, John, let's have a good week.
All right. Thanks, Teddy.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Peter Hamby. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Cadence 13 Studios. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, and Chris Corcoran, chief content officer and founding partner of Cadence 13.